Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
The plight of the uninsured, a laughing matter.
When I was a kid, we didn't have no insurance. You had to be damn near dead to see the doctor. You had to be way past Robitussin. That's all we had when I was a kid, Robitussin. No matter what you got, Robitussin better handle it. Daddy, I got cancer, Robitussin. I broke my leg, Daddy poured Robitussin on it.
Turns out that the Senate Finance Committee may not be offering much more than weak cough syrup for the uninsured in its health care reform plan. The vote is soon. It's expected to pass with no laugh track. On The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning, everyone. Wednesday, October 7th. I'm John Hockenberry here with Celeste Headlee.
Good morning, John. This hour, our own Femi Oke takes us to a poetry slam. You're going to hear some rhymes and verses taking on the healthcare debate. We're also going to see who's going to get the growing Latino vote, Democrats or Republicans. And it's Wednesday. That means the Takeaway Kitchen is all fired up, and we're going to be talking about pumpkins.
But first, let's bring in Dr. Harry Walker. He's director of the Metro Health Center for Community Health in Cleveland, Ohio. Good morning, doctor. Do you expect healthcare reform coming out of Washington to be anything more than a placebo for the uninsured?
Well, good morning. I hope so. The thing about placebo tends to make you feel good temporarily, but really doesn't do a lot of long-term good. Real health care reform done correctly would actually have a chance to make the country better. So,
well, we're going to talk about what it's going to take that actual medicine. Dr. Walker, stay with us. We'll be back to you in just a moment. Right now, everything else you need to know this morning.
In the headlines, today marks 8 years since the start of the war in Afghanistan. President Obama meets with his national security team to discuss strategy there. Yesterday, he told lawmakers he won't sharply reduce the number of troops currently there. He says his review of a request for more troops continues. The president faced opposition from some lawmakers, including Arizona Senator John McCain. He reportedly said the review could not be a, quote, leisurely process. And diplomats across the Americas are heading to Honduras in the next few hours. They're working to solve the political crisis there.
The Senate faces more delays on that health care reform bill. The Finance Committee is still waiting to hear the final cost estimate of its plan from the Congressional Budget Office. The Supreme Court hears a case about freedom of religion today. Justices will hear arguments on whether a cross on public land in California violates the First Amendment. Asian markets were up today. All major indices closed up more than 1% after the performance on Wall Street yesterday. Europe's mostly flat at present. Wall Street gained around 1.5% yesterday. The Dow opens at 97.31. The S&P starts trading at 10.55, and the Nasdaq begins at 21.04 when Wall Street gets going. Futures trading suggests a positive open. The rally continues. America's fight in Afghanistan has lasted for 8 years as of today. It's a war that, even in the shadow of the Iraq War, shouldn't be forgotten, and we've been commemorating it, remembering it, thinking about it, talking about it all week here on The Takeaway. We particularly want to know how it appears in your life, in your family, in your day-to-day lives, in the news. If you're a military service family, how is it affecting you? How have the 8 years changed your lives? And we're also looking for answers from you as to the decision facing the Obama administration right now to send more troops or not. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or send an email to mytake@thetakeaway.org. You've been weighing in on this all week. Please continue.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
Coming up in just a moment, we're going to talk about who the healthcare overhaul plan is exactly expected to help. But we're also talking about the war in Afghanistan today. It's been 8 years, and we've been hearing your stories.
It was an incredibly rewarding experience. Certainly Afghanistan, the attacks on the World Trade Center and going to Afghanistan is a reason. If there was any reason to get a new uniform, that was it. So the time I spent over there felt very rewarding. It was frustrating at times, particularly as we started to see attention and resources being diverted away from Afghanistan to Iraq. But it is what it is, and you make do with what you have.
That's Captain Adrian Dicker-Kudzinski. She served at Bagram Airfield from late 2002 to early 2003. But what's your story? If you went overseas, Was it a rewarding experience for you? Do you have a family member, a loved one overseas? And what do you think on the 8th anniversary of the war in Afghanistan? 8778-MY-TAKE or MyTAKE at thetakeaway.org.
Well, Captain Kaczynski there in that response sent to 8778-MY-TAKE suggested so much has changed over the 8 years. The reasons for getting involved, the sense of connection to both the troops in Afghanistan and to the nation has changed significantly in the last 8 years. Yes, indeed. And that's part of what we're talking about this morning. But let's move to health care, because in Washington, there's expected to be a vote in the Senate Finance Committee, which has been debating and crafting and amending and de-amending a bill on health care reform. We're going to talk about that for this segment on the program this morning. But first, Dr. Harry Walker, director of the Metro Health Center for Community Health in Cleveland, Ohio. You're watching this debate pretty closely, right?
I'm certainly paying attention, yes.
Now, if they were to pass the bill that the Senate Finance Committee has before it now, who would be outside of the net? Who would remain uninsured? Who would not be touched by this bill as far as you can see?
Well, I mean, right now, like I said, there's a lot of devil in the details in this. Depending on how the final vote comes, the concern would be, would there be some folks who would not have enough access to health care?
And do you expect that this would change the situation for the uninsured in any significant way?
Well, there's a chance, if it's not crafted correctly, it would create a situation where it would limit the number of people who would be willing to see folks in these categories. In that case, there could be opportunities where people would have trouble finding a health care provider.
Now, is that population basically the constituency that you serve at the Metro Health Center for Community Health in Cleveland?
It's one of the populations. For instance, everybody talks about undocumented aliens, something like that, but they are around. If they get sick and fall out on the street, somebody has to take care of them. Otherwise, it's a community health problem. So that's a population. Depending, again, on what level of coverage you have, there might be individuals, if they can't find somewhere at other health systems, and they would then come to a place like the Metro Health System seeking health care.
Well, you raise a great point. Dr. Harry Walker, director of the Metro Health Center for Community Health in Cleveland, Ohio. Andre Singleton, sitting here in the studio, 23-year-old, you're a student, right?
Yes.
When you fall, get sick, as Dr. Walker was saying, when you fall down, who takes care of you?
It's a good question. At this point, it's me. It's really problematic for the simple fact I don't have healthcare insurance, especially as a university student.
And you're uninsured now?
Yes.
Right. And do you expect anything from the healthcare bill that you've heard about, read about, that's coming out of the Senate Finance Committee possibly as soon as this week?
I would hope so. I would hope that it would pass, and individuals like myself, and even because I find it extremely problematic too for undocumented aliens that are living and existing within within the U.S. And it's such a touchy subject, and it's something that's so problematic that, especially as a university student, trying to find an answer for it on top of handling academics, which all of these things tie into, leaves me with a lot of headaches.
Well, you're 23 years old, right?
Correct.
I mean, what medical costs do you have?
I have PET scans, CAT scans, MRIs.
Because
I had cancer.
All right.
Yeah.
So you're a cancer survivor student who's uninsured.
Correct.
All right. So Todd Zwillick, a Takeaway Washington correspondent, we have two data points here in the studio which relate to the bill that the Senate Finance Committee may vote on as soon as this week, but we really don't know. Good morning, Todd.
Hey, John. Good morning.
Now, do these people, here's the director of a Metro Health clinic in Cleveland, Ohio, a 23-year-old uninsured cancer survivor from Kansas City, Missouri, who's in our studio. Did these people fall under this bill that the Senate Finance Committee is considering?
Well, they should, and in some ways they have a choice. The big thing in the Senate Finance Committee bill that you're talking about, John, is called the individual mandate. And what that means is individuals are required to buy health insurance, or if they choose not to, pay a fine. So no one's going to come to Andre's door and shove an insurance policy in his face, and nobody's going to take him to jail if he doesn't buy it.
All right, well, let's talk to Andre about that. So is that a good thing? Nobody's going to force you to buy insurance? You probably don't want to buy insurance, so you don't have the money, right?
Exactly. I mean, I'm a work-study student. So how can I even afford it when I gross $2,000?
So the fact that there's no mandate forcing you to buy insurance is a good thing to you?
I don't know. I mean, it's weird. I mean, because either way it goes, it's a catch-22, because I'm required, because I'll be fine.
Legislatively, Todd Zwillick, explain the catch-22 that Andre is in here.
Well, the catch-22 operates on the individual level for people like Andre, and it operates on the level of the entire government, and it's the tension between affordability and coverage. The point of the individual mandate is to get as many people covered as possible for a lot of reasons. One, a lot of people feel like universal coverage is just the right thing to do in terms of equity. Everybody should have insurance. But also, if you think about insurance and the big insurance pool, it's all about spreading risk. The more people that are covered, the cheaper it is for everyone else. And if you leave people out of that, they're more expensive to cover. But the problem with that is that the more people you cover, the more expensive it is, not only for those individuals if they have to buy coverage, but also for the taxpayer, because we have subsidies and premium support and Medicaid and all of these things. So real quickly, let me have you listen to Jay Rockefeller, sure, senator from West Virginia, on the Finance Committee. He is struggling with this, as all the senators are, and he's frustrated. Listen to Rockefeller.
It affects people, and some people will be disappointed. It doesn't cover everybody, for example. And I think the American people right now are thinking, good, well, this will cover every single person who's uninsured, much less underinsured. And it doesn't do that because we are under this restraint, this fiscal restraint.
So the fiscal restraint is preventing the Finance Committee from covering every single person they want to cover. And in addition to that, because affordability is an issue, you know, telling people like Andre, hey, you don't have to buy insurance, but if you don't, we're going to fine you. They can exempt people from that. Say, all right, Andre, you only make $3,000 a year. We're going to exempt you from this whole deal. You don't have to buy anything. You're exempt. You're out. Great. Well, that saves the bill some money. The problem is that Andre still might get hit by a bus. He still might get sick.
Well, he's a cancer survivor. Yeah, I mean, he's got bills right now.
And he's still going to come to the hospital. And if he doesn't have coverage, the hospital hopefully won't turn him away. Dr. Walker won't turn him away. The taxpayer still has to pay for it. And that's the tension everyone's dealing with.
So Dr. Walker, one of the ways that they've gotten around including a public option in this bill is by offering tax credits to people. And, you know, I'm sure that for those on the very low end of the income scale, that a tax credit can't help. And I'm wondering about your patients, that for the people that you see, how many of them are paying enough taxes that the tax credit for their health plan would make a difference?
I doubt that that's a significant group, particularly for the low end, the working poor, as you call them. They're not paying that many taxes to begin with. And see, the catch-22 for the public institutions like ours is that you look at many aspects of that bill that over time they actually cut how much support they provide to safety net hospitals, with the idea that we won't need the funds. But as you already are talking about, there's going to be a group of people who still aren't covered and who are still going to show up at our doorstep and need health care. And somebody has to pay for it some kind of way.
Well, Dr. Walker, then what about the subsidies? If people get direct cash payments for services at your clinic, does that help you out? Does that make your safety net stronger?
If the people if they're provided by, like, county or government authorities.
John, let me jump in there just real quick, because this bill, for people who are the working poor, and it's a sliding scale on a complicated table, but a lot of people would get direct subsidies from the government to pay for their insurance and to pay some of the extra costs like copays and things like that. So if you truly are working poor, this bill tries to give direct money to those people so that they can get coverage.
Well, let's do some math with Andre. Would you consider yourself one of the working poor, Andre?
Definitely.
All right. So how much could you typically afford if the government was kicking in something of a subsidy? And Todd, listen to this, because I want you to know, I want to see if the math jives with who they're trying to target this bill towards.
And even as I listen to the conversation, it's something that, like, if I'm a work study student, on top of having to buy books, on top of having to pay rent, I literally have like no money to pay for the basics as far as food. So there's something that's going to have to be sacrificed anyway. You know, so it's
so $1,000 a month you couldn't do.
Definitely.
$500 a month.
No.
$200 a month.
It would have to be literally something like 25, and that's pushing it.
Andre Singleton, 23-year-old student and uninsured cancer survivor from Kansas City, Missouri. Todd, to take us out in the last 30 seconds, does that math work for this bill, and is he going to fall outside the safety net?
Well, if Andre is truly living on really no cash flow, like at or below the poverty line, he would probably actually do okay in this bill. He would probably get full subsidies and may get his insurance for close to free.
Well, that's good news. Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent. We also spoke with Dr. Harry Walker, director of the Metro Health Center for Community Health, the Safety Net in Cleveland, Ohio. Dr. Walker, thank you.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253. Thanks for listening to the Takeaway Podcast. If there's a story you think we should look at or a conversation you'd like us to start, drop us a line at 877-8-MY-TAKE or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org.